This is an ABC podcast.
I have this morning in Fitzroy a small but delicious slice of time before Max goes to work. Time away from the mess and the noise and the cardboard box situation still threatening to completely overtake our lounge room. Over 100 straight days at home with the kids. To go outside the house more than once in a whole day seems like such an indulgence. I feel slightly nervous, I realise. It feels illicit somehow, like I'm sneaking out for a party. And once I actually am outside, like everyone else is sneaking out to the party too. People are all...
Oh, lovely morning, isn't it?
G'day, how's it going?
And as I turn towards the park, I am doing something I've done since I was freaking out about exams at university. Despite all that is wrong with the world, despite the unsolvable and the inevitable and the depressing, despite everything, despite all the reasons not to, I am walking through Fitzroy and I am thinking of some things that I love. I love the tops of the old terraces in Brunswick Street with their exploding roof gardens and generations-old signs hand-painted on the walls that haven't been painted over yet. I love whatever this new craze is of middle-aged women on rollerblades just loving their lives with their socks pulled up to their knees and their pastel-coloured helmets and knee pads rolling through the streets without a single solitary concern about what anybody thinks but themselves. I love the elegant man in the Edinburgh Gardens who does ballet practice with the grass parrots and the parents kicking soccer balls with their kids in the park. I love funny young people on the internet and funny old people in the street. I love how my four-year-old has slightly misremembered the phrase shiver me timbers and so instead does big wide eyes and goes shivery fingers. I love scientists and artists and the word marmalade and actual marmalade and the fact that someone is always working hard solving a problem you haven't even thought about yet, and old films and new music and how donuts are everywhere all of a sudden. So many donuts. And you. I also like how, in Fitzroy, at the moment, for the most part, people are really kind to each other, like you really do notice it.
You're all idiots! Look at you, you morons!
A gentleman with one arm out his car window drives by at a total crawl, gesturing at everybody in the Edinburgh Gardens, face like a red onion.
Go and live your lives! Be free!
He yells. He's gesturing meaningfully at a flag of some kind attached to his window, but it's all tangled up on the roof and he's having a bit of trouble wrangling it free. A woman walking a dog past me says,
"What an absolute peanut."
And gosh, it's lovely to be part of so many people's lives just by walking through a park. Like the people behind me planning a special delivery for a friend.
The thing is, we need to organise it, but she can't know we organised it, and it needs to involve cake.
Cake on the doorstep?
Yes, doorstep cake. Mystery cake, mystery doorstep cake.
Mm-hmm. Or the person on the phone who passed me earlier.
No, I was trying not to be jealous of a guy called Edward. Do you remember this? No. Yeah, Edward. Yes. So, turned out to be a cat. I know, I'm the worst.
Sometimes it really is good for what ails you just to get out of your own head. To glimpse for just a moment the endlessly fascinating lives of other people.
Bunch of morons!
Except for maybe that guy. I'm heading back towards home to get a coffee from Tom's now. Tom's cafe will be crowded today. Everywhere is. There's a line of hipsters outside the local barber that goes right down the street. I didn't know who Tom from the cafe was 12 months ago, except when I occasionally bought a coffee from him when his cafe was pretty new, but he started delivering groceries to pretty much all the people in our street this year, so we see him all the time now. He keeps in touch with everyone. Looks after everyone. The wall of Tom's cafe is full of children's drawings and fundraising thanks from the local schools. He's forever waving off customers he's been too generous to with a...
It's too easy, mate. Too easy, Dave. Oh, yeah, nah, too easy, Rafiq. Nah, it's too easy, mate. You're doing me a favour. Now, seriously, bugger off. I don't want to hear about it. Too easy, mate.
Too easy, too easy.
In fact, last time I saw Tom was when he was literally rescuing an old lady who was stuck inside her house in our street. It was my neighbour, Wendy, who is fine now, according to her daughter, Beck, who lives alongside her in the flat next door. I dutifully report this to Tom when I order my coffees through his little window. He says,
"How's she doing, Wendy? She all right?"
And I almost forget myself, so confident was I of a too easy. I tell him how she's going. I tell him Beck's fine and Mum Wendy is fine and Greg, with whom he broke into the house to rescue Wendy, is also fine, although he didn't need to know that part. But he looks at me and he says,
"Nice neighbours you got there."
Then he nods behind me.
"Here's another one now."
So of course I turn around and I see Spike approaching. But Spike isn't just another neighbour. Spike has just moved into the next street over from us and she and I used to be close friends back in university. Far from warmly reconnecting where we left off though, she's been weird and stilted and vaguely sullen the few times we've come across each other in the street. Possibly because I briefly went out with her brother. Possibly because she was super weird when she came back from studying overseas. Possibly because life is just ridiculous, particularly at the moment.
Thanks, mate.
There's someone coming out of nowhere, swooping in beside me to get a tray of coffees from Tom.
Too easy, my friend. Have a good one.
There it is. And wasn't that worth waiting for? Don't you feel better about your day when someone made you a coffee that was too easy to make? Not just easy, too easy. Just don't even mention it. That's how easy it was. Almost embarrassing to discuss the impact it didn't even have.
Have you ordered?
I'm standing there like an idiot when Spike, my old friend Spike, the Spike I've been interacting weirdly with, looms up behind me and I realise I'm supposed to step out of the way so she can order her coffee. So I step back a couple of metres and I say, "Oh, sorry, God, sorry." Which is when she says,
"No, no, you're right."
Which shouldn't feel significant, but which feels significant somehow because she's been the one holding back. But she says this with generosity and lightness. And instead of moving past me, she says,
"So, we're neighbours now."
And I say, "Yeah, yeah." Because I'm very clever like that. Tom comes to the window then and he goes,
"What are you after today, Effie?"
Which is weird, even though it is her name. Because we all used to call her Spike. I back away then to a polite distance to wait for my coffee while Tom and Spike have a chat, from which I hear the following.
"Telecommunications Ombudsman."
And,
"Same old story."
And,
"Not if I can bloody help it."
And when I have to reach over to get my coffees, one for me and one for Max, Spike steps back to clear the way for me and says,
"Andy says hi, by the way."
Andy is Spike's brother. So she's spoken to Andy about me. So she's talking to Andy. You never can be sure with those two. I say, "How is he?" She says,
"How do you think?"
But her eyes are full of a smile.
"So long as he can snowboard and dance on the bar until 4 in the morning, he's doing just fine."
And maybe I have been imagining her weirdness towards me the couple of times I've seen her in the street. Because she's doing a marvellous job of being every bit as enchanting as she was as an undergraduate law student. That voice, the way she looks right at you, her eyes full of mischief. She says,
"So, I hear you're the one to speak to if I want to get to know the locals."
I look at Tom, and he looks down at the coffees. I say to Spike,
"Well, you've already met the most important person in the neighbourhood."
She looks at Tom and says,
"Well, this is true."
And he says,
"Settle down, ladies, you'll have me blushing into the coffees. It's bad for the beans, you know."
She tells me then that when she first moved into the neighbourhood, she turned up at Tom's cafe looking for something to eat.
"He was closed, right? What time was it? 4, 5 in the afternoon?
Tom shrugs. I still can't quite believe Spike is talking to me like she used to. Our voices so different. Her slightly taller than me. Her slight lean forward while she speaks.
"Anyway, so whatever, he's closed, right? But he takes one look at me. And he goes, 'No problem. Makes me a sandwich.'
Girl need a sandwich.
Ripper sandwich. I was that hungry. And then...
She does big eyes like this is a naughty secret.
Then he tells me about a little problem the pub over the road was having. They had to get rid of some beer, he reckoned. The stuff they'd had on tap was about to go stale. Reckoned I should take across a vessel and tell them he sent me. A vessel.
This whole thing is just not at all where I thought my morning was going, and I say,
well, I take it you found a vessel.
A man comes up behind us then, and I watch Spike get her phone out of her pocket.
What's your number?
She asks. So we swap numbers, and Spike says,
good. I'll text you for a walk and talk.
So that's quite a turn up for the books, that is. And isn't it strange how the casual use of phrases like walk and talk and I hear you're the one to speak to in a conversation with an unsuspecting third party can seem more casual than they are? It feels like quite a moment, but perhaps that's because I'm short of moments, I think to myself, as I walk home through the streets, past so many women on rollerblades and roller skates with pastel-coloured helmets that it feels like the start of something. A music video, maybe, or a flash mob. Like they're about to start dancing in formation. But they don't. Well, I mean, they might. But if they do, it happens after I'm gone.
Tom, the bloke in the cafe, had no idea. There he was, just making coffee and totally without his knowledge, helping me patch up a friendship. He had no idea we used to be inseparable. No idea I always kind of blamed her for my stupid brother moving overseas, which is so not fair. Andy moved because Andy wanted bigger cliffs to leap off, bigger mountains to hoon down, more spring in his bungee jump. But those were such good times. The three of us, it was so much fun. There was nothing to it but fun. And when I saw her again in the street a while back, I don't know, I guess I kind of felt caught out. Like she might think, oh, there's that fun friend I had a few decades ago. Yikes, look how much fun she isn't anymore. I FaceTimed Andy last night. I said it was about the probate stuff, but he's completely allergic to all of that. Keeps saying,
Yeah, look, whatever, seriously, that's great.
But when I told him how she and I had bumped into each other in the street, he stopped me and leaned in closer.
Hey, you got to go have a drink with her, Spikey, yeah? She's just there, she's close, and she's just like she always was, I promise. Hasn't changed a bit.
Which, I mean, I guess I knew they kept in touch, but whatever. He's right. By the time Tom hands me my coffee, he's also making me take a toolbox he's gone and ferreted out from out the back because I told him about the blind in the bedroom. I'm objecting, of course, and he's saying,
nah, too easy.
Which he says so often, I'm quite sure there are times for him when nothing is easy at all. I'm standing there with the toolbox and he goes,
what?
And I say, you're so busy looking after everybody else. Who looks after you? And do you know what he says? He says,
ha, you and your mate are just the same, aren't you?
Which doesn't answer the question. So I do something barristers often do. I let the silence happen in the hopes that he might feel it.
You know,
he says,
I knew you two would like each other. I was planning to introduce you. Turns out you already knew each other.
He looks at me. Oh, he's letting me now fill the silence. I say we knew each other at uni, believe it or not. And he goes,
why would I not?
Well, we're pretty different, I say. And he goes,
not that different.
And I'm not sure I've got the full measure of this Tom bloke. He gives me one of his blokey nods.
Have a good one.
And I walk home with my coffee and my toolbox and a big list of phone calls I need to make in my back pocket. A full day of hard work ahead of me.
I'm almost at the end of my tiny sliver of alone time this morning, well aware I only have minutes before Max has to leave for work, when I run into Gail, who...
used to live in such a lovely street in Brighton.
And who has had the entire street frog-marched into a cooking roster for Beck's mother, Wendy, the one who had to be rescued by Tom and Greg because, as Gail says...
poor old thing had a bit of a turn.
I try for a passing hello with Gail, but she asks how the kids are and then doesn't wait for an answer.
You are lucky, you know,
she says, holding her hands up preemptively in defence.
Now, I know it doesn't feel like it sometimes, the constant noises, the little messes, the...
She looks at me in a way that makes it perfectly clear how noise travels from our place to hers.
Well, all that squabbling, you know.
I'm about to apologise, but the hand comes up again.
But it's quite... lovely. Actually, you realise that when you don't have it. Such a sign of life, you know?
It's kind of unmooring to hear Gail admit she feels lonely. But of course she would be, living in there by herself. That's why she's out in the street more. Might even be why she's making us all cook for Wendy. I say, how's your grandson going? He must be, what, three now?
Almost. Almost. But... you know, London feels a long way away.
London. I hadn't known her daughter moved to London.
Yes,
she says.
I've been there 10 months now. Plan was for them to be back this week for my birthday, but, well, anyhow.
I find myself fruitlessly attempting to cheer her up. I ask if they're going to FaceTime or something on her birthday. She looks blank for a second and then she gets it.
Oh, FaceTime. On Saturday? Yes, yes. We have an appointment. Oh, and isn't technology marvellous? Yes, that will be nice. Not quite the same, though, but hey-ho.
She straightens up and points at my coffee cup with Tom's writing scribbled on the side.
Did Tom tell you he got a grant to extend the cafe out the back?
Tom did not, which Gail enjoys. Everybody likes knowing Tom. Sometimes you go to the cafe and there are so many people using Tom's name, it gets a bit embarrassing.
Oh, yes. Tom is such a hard-working chap. Imagine, picked his whole life up after that sad business with his husband and moved here from... oh, now, where was it? He did tell me.
I'm wondering about the sad business with the husband, but...
is Tilba a real place?
I now have, because I just checked, exactly 2 minutes before Max has to leave the house and go to work. So I make my excuses and Gail says...
oh, maybe it's just one Tilba. Maybe he's from Tilba. Anyhow, off you go. I know how busy you are.
I hurry towards Max like a runner in a relay, handing him a lukewarm coffee and a kiss. The tiny sliver of me time is almost completely eclipsed, but not quite. I can hear some sort of screen-based activity happening quietly in the other room, but I slink past towards the bathroom, like I'm returning from the street party in the early hours with my shoes in my hands. I like the bathroom. It's like a blank page in a messy scrapbook. I can stand in it, and there's nothing else. Just me. Me and the cold tiles under my feet, and a window that looks out at some trees. And the warm water, so lovely on my hands. I dry my hands and take my phone out of my back pocket. How is it only 9 a.m? I enter Gail's birthday this Saturday into my phone calendar and I open the door to the rest of my day. Eventually, it's the other end of the day, a day full of tears, tantrums, giggles, 2 science experiments, 1 dance-off, 2 important and constantly interrupted phone calls, a debate about whether violin practice was interrupted by a soccer game or a soccer game was interrupted by violin revenge, 1 eventful walk in the park and me setting fire to a tea towel. It's evening now. It's also bin night, by the way, and I'm a total hero about it.
You go to bed, babe, I'll do the bins.
but Max knows.
Ah, yes.
He says,
your appointment with the booze hounds.
Which is a very uncharitable interpretation of the position, and I tell him so.
It's a... fair enough.
So I head outside with a rubbish bin and some beers, met enthusiastically by Beck and Greg.
Ah, here she is.
Two neighbours whom I suspect on very flimsy evidence of having a secret romance. Well, this adorable scene isn't helping. Each of them leaning against a rubbish bin, drink in hand, for all the world like they're at a seaside resort drinking something posh with an umbrella in it.
Welcome to the party,
Beck says.
We were just talking about terrible bosses.
This has been happening recently. Collections of neighbours standing around in the street, putting the bins out at the same time together, drink in hand and gossip at the ready. It's just these two tonight. No Gail. None of the students from 100. Just us. We talk about our terrible bosses, current and past, and I don't mean to boast, but I dominate the leaderboard effortlessly.
He said what? Are you serious?
That is appalling. And you say he had no chin? Like, at all? Totally chinless.
We talk about the news, because everybody talks about the news, and about the kids, and about Beck's work, and how bright the stars have been lately. And then I bring up Gail.
Her birthday? Is it really? That dark horse.
And we can't for the life of us figure out how old she is, but the three of us agree to surprise her with a drink out the front of her place on Saturday, whether she likes it or not.
She will like it, and also not,
says Greg, summing things up nicely. Back inside, I'm brushing my teeth, cold tiles under my feet, that messy treetop moving slightly out the window, and my phone glows with a message. It's from Spike. It's only two words. It just says, so glad. So now I'm smiling alone in the bathroom. And even though Beck and Greg and Gail from Brighton and Tom are great, and even though I didn't think I needed a new friend who is also an old friend, it's a pretty nice thing to have.
The Fitzroy Diaries was created on Wurundjeri land. It was written by Lauren Clark. The series editor was Sophie Townsend. The sound design was by Simon Branthwaite, with studio production by Justine Sloan-Lees. Location recording was by Camilla Hannan. It stars Lauren Clark, Caroline Craig, Elle Mandelis, Luke Ryan, Jinghan Chan, Stuart Farrell, Stuart Thorne, Claire Wern, and Sophia Gregorovich. And of course, Claudia Clark Thorne. That's me.
And me, Charles Clark Thorne.
You also heard the voices of Elizabeth Kulas, Mike Williams, Russell Stapleton, Stephen Tilley, Michael Roper, Matt Willis, Graham Kidd, Yanni Ajisalu, Anna Stendel, and the Murish, Waldron, and Howlett families.
Thank you, Claudia.
Wonderful. Thank you for listening to this episode of Fitzroy Diaries.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.